And you. Okay, welcome to the Sunday night. There is a solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions of the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Elizabeth, a compulsive overeater from Oregon.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth B. in Oregon, and I am a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. I'm happy to be here today, and thank you, everyone who's doing service. I'm going to start with a quick prayer. I'm going to say, God, please help me to speak the truth from my heart so that I may carry the message. If you've heard me be a lead qualification before, you can zone out for a moment while I say a couple of things to start off my lead share. The first is that I was encouraged to take what I like and to leave the rest, to listen for the similarities and not the differences. You know, nothing gets me a resentment like the people I live with, the people I work with, or the people I recover with. So if there's anything I say on the call tonight that sounds like nails on a chalkboard or that gets the hairs in the back of your neck standing up, I know for me that I've got to clear that stuff in a 10 step. So if there's something I say tonight that does not resonate, I ask that you keep coming back to another meeting. Somebody will say something that sounds like it's something that will help. And then finally, I will say that, you know, when I do that 10 step, it's often with my sponsor or someone else. And sponsorship has been an amazing miracle for this program for me. So I know that I cannot avail myself of the joys and the miracles of this recovery without a sponsor. And then finally, relapse is a part of my story. So I encourage folks to keep coming back, right? If you're brushing crumbs off before you get on the meeting tonight, you know, putting on the Zoom camera, if you're off camera, you know, eating in a meeting, been there, done that. I know for me that the miracles happen in this room. So there you go. Those are kind of my preliminaries. So what's a nice place like this doing with a girl like me? Well, I am kind of a garden variety compulsive overeater, which means that there's nothing super unique about me, right? I heard really early on not to be terminally unique, right? Not to think that my situation is so different that these 12 steps, as outlined in this book, that helped millions of people, could not work for me. So I started Overeaters Anonymous when I was 16 years old in 1993. So yes, I'm closer to 50 now than I am to 20. And most of the gals in the meeting when I started, because it was mostly gals, were my age now or older. So like, how did I become middle-aged? I don't know. And so when I started Overeaters Anonymous in the 1990s, incidentally, at the exact same hospital where I was born. So that is just one of the very many cheeky things that my higher power has placed in my life. I think I have a very cheeky higher power who's put all of these miracles in my life, and it's only in hindsight that I've been able to see them. So my very first Overeaters Anonymous meeting was in 1993 in the exact same hospital where I was born. And this program has truly allowed me to grow up and has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams and has allowed me to become, you know, reborn in many ways. So I've not been abstinent low these decades, right? For those of you doing the math, it's 2025 right now in this recording. So I've not been abstinent for, you know, 32 years, but I've never left Overeaters Anonymous or some food fellowship. So when I say, keep coming back, it's because I speak from experience. I do not recommend relapse. I do not recommend folks take 3 decades to work the steps as outlined in the big book, but sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. So I was maybe one of the slower people. I will just fast forward and say that I recommitted to this program in June of 2024. So that is my abstinence date. That is the date from which I've been entirely abstinent. And so what happened? What led me up to June 24th, 2024? Well, like I said, I'd never left Overeaters Anonymous, but I had been talking the talk and not walking the walk. So I can quote the big book. I know it quite well. I had very good early sponsors. And when I came in the 90s, we didn't have a lot of OA literature, right? I mean, we had the OA 12. We didn't even have the 12 and 12. And we had the For Today Reader and then like the Brown Book full of stories. And of course, the AA Big Book. So a lot of the sponsors I had in the early days, took me through the steps as outlined in the big book. And so I could quote the big book. Like I knew it. I'd heard it read lots of times. I'm very clever with words, but I wasn't abstinent as outlined in the OA definition. I certainly wasn't recovered, and I certainly hadn't, turned my will and my life over to the care of God. I was still trying to control a lot of things. And so they say half measures availed us nothing. So it didn't avail me nothing, but it did not avail me, entire abstinence or the miracles of recovery. I will say that I attended a workshop that talked about sober eating, and it was led by some folks that I know from a city I used to live in. And once we all went into Zoom, I could attend meetings I used to attend before I moved up to Oregon. And I was sitting there in that meeting, and I was like, holy moly, I am not abstinent as the Overeaters Anonymous definition says, which is abstaining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors. Emotional, spiritual, and physical recovery is a result of living and working the 12 steps on a daily basis. So, what had gotten me was not the what I call like the clear and present danger. It was the lookalikes. So I'd put down like the white sugar and the white flour, and I was like congratulating myself and patting myself on the back. But I was making all these concoctions with like the subsidiaries and affiliates of all of the things that were my alcoholic foods. I mean, some of the things they didn't even have in the 90s, right? All of the syrups and all of the, different kinds of sweeteners and, almond flour. And like, oh my gosh, I mean, bonkers. It was completely bonkers. And so I listened to this and I realized that I had not abstained. I have not abstained from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors. So I got a sponsor. I chose a plan of eating from the Where Do We Begin pamphlet. It was called at the time Dignity of Choice. I think they've revised it, rebranded it, and now it's published by the OA Fellowship as Where Do I Begin? And it's got a bunch of food plans in the back. And so I grabbed one. And while I did that, I also did kind of a step zero inventory of what are my alcoholic foods and behaviors. Because I don't know about you, I don't know your story. I don't know whether you're an overeater, an undereater, a restrictor, an exercise bulimic. I'm not sure. But I'm a garden variety compulsive overeater. I had a little blip of anorexia, but that's not my main manifestation of this illness. And so everything for me, it was like munchy crunchy, ooey gooey, battered and fried, sweet. And so most of my overeating was done with my hands or spoon. Occasionally I'd use a knife to slather something, but for the most part it was my hands and a spoon. And so I just had to get really honest about what were the things that triggered me. I did get in touch with a nutritionist who, and I will get to the steps in a minute. I just want to set the scene. I did get in touch with a nutritionist who understands compulsive overeaters, and I was on a wait list for a couple months. I continued using the Dignity of Choice food plan, and I sent her my step zero assignment. And I said, look, when you make my food plan, I don't want any of this. I can't have six little meals throughout the day. I can't have any nuts or nut butters. I don't want any of this stuff. So when you make it, these are the things that, make me answer the call of the wild. And she said, great. So she gave me a food plan and I've been following that. I've been abstinent since June 24th, 2024. But the food is just the tip of the iceberg. Yes, I have to be entirely abstinent, like they talk about in Dr. Silkworth's opinion. But that's if it was all that was, and I would have been like, I'd not be here on a Sunday afternoon. I'd be out at the park with my family. I keep coming back because I have the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. So how do I arrest the obsession of the mind? All of the other steps, right? So I do step one. I get entirely abstinent. I get rigorously honest about what are my alcoholic foods and behaviors. And then I get a sponsor and she takes me through the steps as outlined in the big book. And so that's what I did. I got the food plan and I come from a line of sponsorship where we do talk about the food. So, I told her what my abstinence was. I told her what my food plan was. I was committing my food to her every night. And I was also committing to her what two meetings I was going to attend, because yes, she wanted me to go to two meetings in the beginning. I was also had to like add gratitude lists on there. Like there was a lot of work in the beginning. I was listening to podcasts. I was making three outreach calls a day. I was going to two meetings a day. I was, weighing and measuring my food and, following my food plan. And it was like, I also work for income outside the home and I have a husband and two small children. And so it was a lot. It was a lot of doing to do. But I was willing because what's the alternative? The alternative is all the food math. Well, if I park further away in the grocery store, can I eat that thing? Like, is this a snack? Can I, if I forgot to eat this at my lunch, can I carry this over to that? All of that chatter is gone. So then what happened? I got busy in the big book and I started to work the steps as outlined because we say in some of our, OA literature, we say our program is patterned after that of Alcoholics Anonymous, changing only the word food and compulsive overeater, right, from alcohol and alcoholic. Everything else remains the same in the big book. So that's what I did. So what happened? I'm a firm believer that the tools help me work the steps. Because how did I find a sponsor? I was going to a meeting, right? How do I talk to my sponsor? We use the book. So the tools of OA are amazing. The tools help me work the steps. The steps get me that spiritual awakening and the conscious contact with my higher power. Only God can keep me abstinent, right? On page 60 of the big book, when we talk about, our personal adventures before and after made clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. That's step one. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he were sought. That's those B and C are step two, right? So no human power can relieve my compulsive overeating. Not my sponsor, not the meetings, not the tools, not me. Not a dietitian, not a Pilates instructor. No human power is going to be able to do that. But God can, right? God could and would if he were sought. And so, how do I seek God? I work the steps. So, working the steps gives me that spiritual awakening. God keeps me abstinent. I can't stay abstinent without working the tools. And so, I just keep going around and around on that carousel of recovery, right? Tools help me work the steps. Steps help me get a conscious contact with God. God keeps me abstinent. I stay abstinent by working the tools. So, the big book is not complicated, which is frustrating because I like to complicate things, right? The big book is actually pretty simple, but it's pretty radical, right? The things that they're asking me to do, and it even says that, right? It even says here, like, these things that we were asked to do, like these weren't. These weren't hard, but it's pretty radical, these things that they're asking us, right? So what are they asking me to do? They're asking me to have a relationship with myself, with God, and with other people, because food only appears in the first part of the first step. I really wish about the food. I really wish I could find the perfect food plan and the perfect blender and the perfect smoothie recipe, and that would be all that it was, but it's not. I put the food down And then I've got to work the steps because the steps help me be in contact and be in right living with myself, with God, and with other people. So what does that look like for me today? I have worked through the steps. I do consider myself recovered. I know that that can be a dirty word for people, but it is a word that they use several times throughout the book, the big book. I'm recovered. I'm not cured. So now I have a sponsee because it's a 12-step program. It's not an 11-step program. So I have a sponsee who I work with, and I'm taking her through the steps as I was taken through. I have a service position, a shameless plug for our Saturday of 5 p.m. Pacific, 7 Central, 8 Eastern, working with others sponsorship meeting. We'll put that information in the chat. So I do have a service position that I go to in a meeting. I'm still attending one meeting a day. I've dialed that back down from two, one meeting a day, and then 10, 11, and 12, right? 10, 11, and 12. So, step 10, we're in the 10th month. Step 10 talks about taking personal inventory and when I'm wrong, promptly admitting it. Right? We continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Not if I'm wrong, it's when I'm wrong, right? Because again, garden variety compulsive reader, human being trying to have a spiritual experience, I'm going to be wrong a lot. And as I mentioned at the top of my share, it's usually, the things that make the hair on the back of my neck stand up these days are usually having to do with family or the people I live with. Work, other people in recovery not doing what I think they should do at the time I should think they should do it. And then usually like people in traffic, occasionally some political stuff. That's what my 10 steps are these days. And then step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. There's no place in the big book that talks about having to have a set amount of time in the morning to pray and meditate. A lot of folks have, they set a timer, they have a specific amount of time that they do. I have a very simplistic, very basic step 11 ritual. Like I mentioned, I have a husband. I work for income outside the home, and I have two small children under the age of six. So be careful what you wish for. You just might get it. I have a very full life. But God does not make too hard terms for those who seek him. And so how do I seek God? I read three prayers in the morning. I read the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer, and then the 11th step prayer, also known as the St. Francis prayer, that's in the 11th step of the AA, 12 and 12. And then I take 4 minutes of quiet time in the morning, where I breathe in the faith and I breathe out the fear. I ask God to help me to show up as my ideals, ideal mother, ideal wife, ideal person in recovery, ideal sponsor, ideal sponsee, employee, employer, et cetera. I go through the whole list, ending with citizen. And then I hit the ground. I hit the ground. I hit my knees, right? I get on my knees, and I thank God for another day of abstinence. And then about that time, one of my kids is crashing in the door about 5:30 in the morning, right? So I plug in with my higher power, get right with God, and then boom, day starts. I layer several things throughout the day to keep in touch with God. Because again, I can read the meditation books in the morning. I can even hear them in a meeting. And with 7 minutes, I've completely forgotten what they've said, right? So I love the For Today book, don't get me wrong, but my conscious contact with God is throughout the day. It's not just like a one and done. So I've added it to other things that I do that are non-negotiables. So I brush my teeth at least twice a day, which is a miracle because when I was in relapse and when I was not taking care of myself, I often didn't, care about my personal hygiene. But today I do brush my teeth twice a day. And so there's not a lot happening when I'm brushing my teeth. I shouldn't be talking because there's a toothbrush in my mouth. I shouldn't be doing a whole lot else because, I've only got one hand free. So that's when I'm praying to God, right? So I pray to God when I'm brushing my teeth. And then also when I buckle my seatbelt. So I'm driving again after like a long hiatus of not driving a lot during the pandemic. And so I'm driving again, and every time I buckle my seatbelt, I just say a quick prayer and I say, God, if you're my co-pilot, let's change seats. Right? God needs to be my pilot. I need to be the co-pilot. Nobody knows I'm saying it, like whether I'm in the back of an Uber or whether I'm driving, like I don't make a big deal of it, but like I plug into my higher power. Because like I said, a lot of my tense up coming have to do with like the way people drive and the way I think they should drive. So let me just plug in with God and make sure that God's my pilot, right? And I'm the co-pilot. And then I eat three meals a day and one snack. And so if there's any place I need to pray, it's before I go to eat, because I know that I could not do this by myself. I know, but for the grace of God, I will be eating all those lookalikes again and back in that food math in a hot minute. And so I say a quick prayer. It goes something like this: God, thank you much, so much for this beautiful food. Please help me not to over or undereat. I don't make any signs of the cross. I don't hold hands with my family. Nobody knows I'm doing it. I don't close my eyes. I just have a quick moment with God to plug in, because it's really interesting what goes into my mouth, what food goes into my mouth, really affects the words that come out of my mouth. So I just take a quick minute to get right with God, and then I do a nightly review. My sponsor has asked that I do it, the 10 step, my nightly review, closer to the end of my work day. So around 5-ish, when I'm logging off at work before I have to like log back into to wife and mother duties. Do I always do it then? No. But by 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, I'm usually completely exhausted. So she's like, hey, what if we did it earlier in the day, kind of at the 5 o'clock hour when you're winding down? And I'm like, oh, okay, that actually makes a lot of sense. So like, clear any of the wreckage from the work day if I haven't already, because it does say you're supposed to do it promptly, right? Not once a day or once a night, kind of promptly. And then I could go into my work, my home space, and any resentments that come up there, I can clear later if I need to. And then step 12, I can't give it away if I don't have it, right? So I know a lot of folks kind of, kind of do like 1, 2, 3, 12, 1, 2, 3, 12. And I'm guilty of that. I did that kind of a lot in the beginning, but I have to have had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps. So gonna kind of have to have had that. And then I try to carry the message. I try to carry the message. So we talk about this a lot in our sponsorship meeting. The statistics are not great. This is a tough disease. It wants to get us alone to kill us. And the work involved for this compulsive overeater, just to stay relatively neutral, not even happy, joyous, and free that they talk about in the big book, but just like relatively neutral with food, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, right? And so some folks are willing, some folks are not. I wasn't always willing in the beginning, right? But I try to carry this message to others. So I've had a lot of, swing and misses when it comes to folks wanting to work with me. And that's fine, because I stayed abstinent. I sponsor other people. I work intensively with others, because nothing so much provides immunity for me as intensive work with others. So that's why I'm doing it. It's very selfish, right? Like, my sponsor's like, oh my gosh, I'm so grateful. I'm like, no, I'm grateful to you, because you are reminding me that like what comes out of my mouth, and if I'm saying it to you, I should probably be doing it myself. And I don't ask my sponsees to do anything that I don't do or haven't done. And so it just really keeps me in check. So I try to carry this message to alcoholics, to compulsive overeaters. I don't always succeed. Sorry, I got tripped up on that. I don't always succeed, but I try. And so not only do I have to carry it within the rooms, but I've got to practice these principles in all my affairs. Where? Like, I don't just get to be nice to people in OA, or I don't just get to like pray for people in recovery. I got to do this everywhere. In my home, it's really hard there. In my workplace, when I'm driving in traffic, when I'm standing in the TSA pre-check line, right? So like, I've got to practice these principles in all of my affairs. And that is not easy. It's simple, but not easy. So I can be super duper spiritual, and then I can shout up the stairs and be like, be quiet, I'm on a program call. That is insane, right? That is insane. So I'm definitely going to say here that I have claiming spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection, right? But that I have a chance today because I have a blueprint for living as outlined in these steps. So I'm just going to say quickly, I'm going to share a couple of miracles. One people always like to know about because I didn't come in here a happy fat person. I have released 70 pounds since June of 2024, which is awesome. It's totally a miracle. I'm so grateful for that. But that's just like the tip of the iceberg, right? My sponsor calls it Elizabeth 2.0, and she recognized a lot of the miracles before I did. But I will say that in the ninth step promises, when they say we will be amazed before we're halfway through, what they're talking about through is halfway through making the amends, right? They're not like talking about halfway through going through the steps or halfway through, reading the big book. It's like, no, when I'm halfway through of making those ninth step amends, I'm gonna be amazed. And so I will share with you, and I will close with this. I had been estranged from my parents for almost 25 years. And I am a survivor of childhood sexual abuse and incest, which is not uncommon for people in the rooms. So if that is part of your story, it's part of mine too. And I decided to separate myself from my folks who were involved in that. And I hadn't been in contact with them for decades. I hadn't seen them since my maternal grandfather's funeral in 2000. And I have siblings, and so it was very complicated because, if my siblings were inviting me to an event and my parents were going to be there, I wasn't going to be there. I asked my siblings not to share any personal information about me to my parents. It was just, and last October when I was giving my sponsor my fifth step. And she's like, we're going to have to look at your parents. And I was like, no, my jaw was clenched. My face froze. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to look at my parents. And so she's like, okay, we'll get there. I was like, nope, I'm not going to look at my parents. Fast forward to Christmas time of 2024. I put out a family Christmas card every year. And on Christmas Eve, I'm late. I don't do, again, spiritual progress, not perfection. My Christmas card's usually a New Year's greeting. I was thinking, like, I should probably just send one to my parents. I should probably just send one to them. Because, by the way, they did end up on my ninth step list, and I had been praying the resent pr prayer for them that's in the back of the big book, right? I pray that they have all the things I want for myself, all the health, wealth, and happiness, all of the, career success, financial success, all the friendships and family and connections, all the recovery and connection with God that I want for myself and more. So I prayed that for my parents for, I don't know, about 6 weeks. Things started to shift around the US Thanksgiving time in November. So Christmas Eve of 2024, I'm thinking I should probably send my parents a card. I mean, what's the big deal? And I received a card from my mom that day addressed to my two sons. And in the past, I would have thrown it out. I would have burned it. I would have given it to my husband to read. And I opened it and I was like, well, that's really sweet. She sent them each a card with like a $2 bill inside, right? And then I told my sponsor, and she's like, wow, that's a miracle. You didn't burn it. You didn't forward it to me. You didn't have your husband put it in the trash. And I told her that I was thinking about sending them a card. And she said, if you're thinking about it, I think that's a God thing. And, cheeky higher power had them send you a card the same day. So I sent them one. And then my birthday is in the beginning of January. So I sent my mom and dad a card and I said, I spoke the truth, right? I said, thank you for having me. I'm so grateful I'm alive. I didn't thank them for being wonderful parents. I didn't tell them I want to see them on my birthday. I spoke my truth, which is I am grateful I'm alive. And I'm so grateful they had me. And then this past summer in June of 2025, we were having a 30-year high school reunion. Again, don't know how I got middle-aged. And it's in my hometown where my parents still live. And it was the weekend before I was going overseas to visit my sister. And so I was found out that there was this high school reunion. And I'm like, I can't go. We're going to be going overseas and within like 4 days, I can't go. And then I stopped and I paused and I got I got in touch with God, and God said, "Your family doesn't go. Why don't you go? And why don't you make amends to your parents while you're there?" And so I worked it out with my sponsor. I wrote my parents a letter. I asked that they be willing to hear my amends. They did. I saw them in this summer of 2025. I hadn't seen them in almost 25 years. I made my amends to them. Again, I had a script, I had a plan, I had the whole thing worked out with my sponsor. I went to my 30th high school reunion. It was dynamite. I hadn't seen those people in decades. But now I can do what it talks about in the big book, which is I can walk, I can go anywhere a free man can go, provided I'm willing to follow a few simple suggestions. I can go to family gatherings now if my parents are there. I'm not afraid of them anymore. I don't resent them anymore. I forgive them. I forgive them for me, not for them. Again, we're not best friends. I'm not going there for Christmas. I'm not texting them every Sunday. I'm communicating with them with what feels right for me. They've sent a couple of holiday cards to my kids. But it was a miracle. It was a miracle. And beyond my wildest dreams, right? If you would have told me this time last year when I was giving my sponsor my fist up, I couldn't even go to my home state. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri, where I went to my first OA meeting. I had not been back to that place since my because I didn't want to see them. I didn't want to run into them at the grocery store. I mean, talk about nursing a resentment, right? And so now, God bless them and change me. I can pray for them. I can love them. I don't have to be friends with them. That's not what the step is about. So miracles can happen in this program. I'm really grateful to be here. I think I've run the clock. I'll put my contact information in the chat. Thank you all for inviting me to this meeting, and I will pass. Thanks.